1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmer. And today, very special program. We are joined by a true baseball legend, Dave Parker, who has collaborated with Dave Jordan to write a terrific book, and it's called Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood. And Dan, you've heard of tell-all books. Well, this one does not leave anything out, I don't believe. So, Dave Parker, we welcome you to Feldis and Kale. Great to have you along with us.
Well, it's a pleasure being with you.
Well, Dave, today it's a very special day in baseball. It's Jackie Robinson Day. And, of course, between today and tomorrow, all baseball teams will be wearing the number 42. And what does Jackie Robinson and his legacy mean to you?
It means everything. I mean, Jackie broke the color barrier for baseball. He did a host of other things after baseball. It meant everything.
Yep, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. Now, let's talk a little bit about your background. And you grew up very close to the old Crosley Field in Cincinnati, where the Reds played for many, many years. And you had a surprise visit, as I understand it, from a pair of great Cincinnati Reds players, Vada Pinson and Frank Robinson, when you were quite young.
Right. They were my idols. I used to see them come into the ballpark. They'd be right behind each other, and they both had the white Thunderbird with the porthole window and red interior. And watching them come in basically made me want to play baseball. And the association with Crosley Field being so close made baseball a part of my life.
Dave, you had an amazing career in the major leagues, and known for just so many skills, and you had a great arm and threw people out. What was a better feeling, throwing somebody out at home plate or second base, or hitting a home run?
Well, a home run is hard to beat.
Yeah,
because you get a sensation when you hit a home run, and you got it. It sends this wave of energy down your back. And the home run is hard to beat. But throwing guys out was good, too.
Yeah.
But they kept running. I had 26 assists one year.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
They continued to run.
I don't know why they would if they went your direction.
But they did, and that's a good thing, because you wouldn't have had those assists if they didn't, right?
Right. That's one way to look at it.
That's right. You had a tryout with the Reds in your hometown when you were in the 10th grade, when you were a sophomore in high school?
Right.
That's pretty unbelievable. How did that come about?
Well, they had a workout, and I lived, like I say, a block away.
Yeah.
And during that time, I moved to Cummingsville. But I was familiar with the Reds organization. I would look in the paper and see where they was having tryouts. They had a tryout with Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. And I went to that tryout, hit a few balls in the sun deck, got maybe one or two over the back fence. And when I was finished up, I'm walking away with a friend of mine, Connie Warren, and guys yelling, "Hey, where you going? We want to sign you." And I got closer to him, and I talked to him. I said, "You can't sign me. I'm in the 10th grade."
I understand that, Pete Rose was pretty impressed with you.
Well, Peter just came up. He was the little firecracker ball player, did all the head first dives and running over catchers, which I was victimized for that too. Pete was a hot item. And they got him, and then they had Frank Vada, John Edwards, a catcher.
Yep.
They had a pretty sound ball club.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Dave Parker, our guest, he and co-author Dave Jordan have written the book Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood. And Dave, why did you decide to write the book?
I just wanted to leave something out here where I'm telling my story, because he gets all distorted.
Right.
So telling my story got important to me as I got older. And that's one of the reasons I'm writing the book.
And part of your story is, Dave, your nickname, the Cobra. How did you get that nickname?
I got it because of a boxing fan, Tony Bordone, who's our trainer for the Reds, and he was a big boxing fan for the Pirates. He was a big boxing fan, and he kept calling me the Cobra. And Bob Prince, the announcer, made it famous, but it caught on like wildfire.
And Bob Prince was quite a colorful guy himself, no doubt about that.
Yeah, he used to come to the bus. We'd all be on the bus as the players, supposedly the guys that's making all the money. And Bob Prince, Bentley, pull up and pick him up. I'm saying, this guy is doing something right.
I guess so. And, boy, he was around for a long time with the Pirates. Your first dream, I guess, was not necessarily to play Major League Baseball, but to play football at The Ohio State University.
That was a part of my plan. I wanted to play football with Ohio State. That was important to me, and that was in my little plan. I got stages how I'm going to approach getting to the Major League. And football was my first love. I loved the physical part of it. I could outrun most players, and I was very good at it.
I bet you were. With your size, I can see why you, size and speed, I can see why you would have been terrific. Let's talk about a couple of the baseball greats that had a big impact on you. First of all, the late, great Roberto Clemente.
Yeah, he was the great one. You know, this guy could do it all. Hit for average. He was a 5'2 player. And losing him was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because he was such a good guy. I mean, he would do everything to help you. He used to play in the spring training game and then take, he was a chiropractor. He used to work with a U1 bat, and he would put the bat in these various areas on the back and straighten people's backs out. That was something that the trainers can do.
Wow.
He did that. And he helped me out on the throws.
Yep.
He was talking about throws. I was short arming the ball because I was a catcher. I signed as a catcher. And
and he had a tremendous arm. He had one of the great arms in the history of baseball, as did you, no doubt about that. What about Willie Stargell?
Willie was instrumental to me getting to the major leagues. He took me on the wing, really took good care of me. And he was the leader. You know, Willie was a universal personality, and he led the club, helped a lot of guys out. Willie was a great guy to have around.
And Willie Stargell, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, would warm up on deck, not with a couple different bats or a weight on the bat, but rather a sledgehammer. And you took to that, too. You warmed up on deck with a sledgehammer. Is that right?
Yeah, 8-pounder.
Yeah.
We used to take it and twirl it over the back of our head and get us good and loose. And plus, it was an intimidating factor for the opposing team. Pitchers didn't like to see that bat.
I bet not.
I mean, it's sledgehammer.
they never like to see you at bat. That's for sure, Dave Parker. No doubt about that. Is it true one time, Dave, you actually left the ballpark in full uniform to go out to eat with one of your teammates who was just sent down to the minor leagues?
Yeah, one of my best buddies, Larry Demery. And he had got released. He had arm problems. He was a pitcher, threw in the mid-90s. And he got cut. And that's when I went up to the hot dog stand and talked with him. Might have had a Brucey or two.
But, in full uniform.
In full uniform.
Now,
I felt sorry for him.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you get demoted, absolutely. Dave, your battle with drugs very well publicized during your career. How did that addiction begin?
It wasn't an addiction. I was socializing. I mean, we hung around people. The people that we hung around was people that had it. You know, actors, doctors, teachers. I mean, in it all, professions. And I just got caught up in it. I walked away from it. I wasn't rehabilitated. I didn't miss no games. I stood accountable for using it, but I was never any of those things. I just walked away from it.
How did you? When did you decide you wanted to walk away from it?
About 1984.
Yeah, and what did something a specific event inspire that, or you just decided that was it? You've had it. You had enough of it.
Well, Ben, I was having a child. My wife was pregnant at the time.
Yeah. Oh, that's probably the best reason. Tell us about that. Yep. That Pittsburgh club, you know, and everybody, you know, of a certain age anyway, remembers that 1979 World Series, the Pirates and the Orioles, the We Are Family. That is really one of the most memorable, I think, teams of all time.
Yeah, it was America's team.
Yeah.
And Dallas can take that title and that name and use it. The Pirates is definitely the people's team. We had 12 different combinations of uniform.
Yeah.
We had very colorful players. We had the theme song that everybody loved.
Sure.
So we were the most liked team in baseball.
There's no doubt. No doubt. It was you're a colorful bunch of guys and great players, and really it was a lot of fun to watch. Now, a number of years ago, many people maybe don't know that you were diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. How are you dealing with that?
I'm having a slow day today. I'm normally a lot quicker, but Parkinson's brings you something new every day. It's an adventure. You wake up one morning, your legs are working well, you're feeling good, and then the next morning you wake up, your legs ain't working. Everything's different.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a disease. It's the only thing that I done had in my life that's defeating me, but it ain't beating me yet.
No, and tell us about the Dave Parker 39 Foundation.
Well, the foundation was started because of somebody contacting me to do a sort of a speech for the Parkinson organization in Cincinnati, and I got involved, did the speech. Then I started having events. I had like a golf tournament. I did $48,000 coming out of the chute. Baseball helped me out and gave me about $15,000. So it was a good start.
Yeah, absolutely so. Hey, I wanted to ask you, when you signed with Cincinnati, how did you get along with Marge Schott, the controversial Reds owner? How did you and Marge get along?
We got along fine. You know, she just chose to show her belief is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And I had a situation where she made some statements about me and Eric Davis, and that was something that was bad for society, you know, for her to make those statements.
Yeah. So, Dave, if you could pick out one memory that you had, and you had so many in your amazing career, is there one memory that stands out to you above all the rest?
It's something that you, for me, is something that I did collectively, and that was to win the series with the Pirates in 1979. That was something that everybody could rejoice in and deal with being a part of. So it was probably the 79 series is what I hold in the highest regard.
Well, you certainly have so many accomplishments. You in fact, also won the first home run derby in 1985 that Major League Baseball put on. And what if for folks who are out there listening, Dave, who are interested in, you know, playing baseball? I played baseball growing up and wasn't good enough to go beyond high school. I tried out at the college level and didn't make it. But for those who are thinking about playing baseball or who are playing baseball, what advice do you give to those kids out there? And what advice do you give to the parents of those kids?
Well, for the kids, you got to practice. You know, you do it every day, practice. You do things that you do over and over again, and that's where you develop your skills. For parents, keep them involved. You know, keep them involved in sports, school activities, you know, things that keep them out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good advice, Dave Parker, and the book is fantastic. It's called Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood, and you just brought us so many thrills during your baseball career with the Pittsburgh Pirates and later on the Reds and other teams as well. But, Dave, an honor to have you with us today on Feldis and Kale, and you know, our thoughts and prayers are with you.
All right, I appreciate having them.
All right. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
We appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's the great Dave Parker. How about that, Dan Feldis?
That was great.
Yeah.
That was great.
And he is a true legend and should be in baseball's Hall of Fame.
He should be. I don't quite get that.
Yeah.
So
there's no doubt in the minds of many that Dave Parker, one of the all-time greats. 103.9 1450 WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com, Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion. Amy Hall will be joining us in just a short time here on the program today, also presented by your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and it is a great read. I haven't read the entire book, but it really, he doesn't hold anything back.
The Cobra.
Yeah, and you know, he was well publicized about his battle with drugs, but I guess just one day he decided, you know, his wife, as he said, was having a child, and that's probably the best reason of all to give it up and, you know, concentrate more on your family and you know, kudos to him for being able to do that. But just a terrific read, a real page turner, as they say. Today, as we air this edition of Feldis and Kale, it is April 15th. And, of course, we always used to think of April 15th as Income Tax Day. The last couple of years, or maybe 3 or 4 years, we've had extensions. And what's the date now? Is it May 15th, I think? You have to get your taxes in by May 15th. But April 15th, you always used to think of income tax day. But actually, in more recent years, it's become known as One Boston Day, as it was 8 years ago today, Dan, that the Boston Marathon bombing took place, which ultimately resulted in five deaths and many, many more serious injuries. And, you know, I was at Fenway Park for that Patriots Day game that year, and the Red Sox won on a walk-off double. And the person I was with had never been to the finish line of the Boston Marathon. But unfortunately, her mother was in the hospital at the time, and she wanted to get over and visit her mother in the hospital after we had gone to the Red Sox game. Otherwise, we would have gone to Boylston Street to see the finish of the Boston Marathon. Wow. And who knows what might have taken place, but it was a day that you know, people who were, you know, people will never forget, whether they were around the area or not, but just a tragic day in the city of Boston. And we remember those who were victims of that day in many ways. So many families, so many lives affected by that Boston Marathon bombing back 8 years ago today.
Remember them, the families, and our thoughts and prayers with them. Also, I think, Ken, you know, one of the things that we saw in the aftermath of that is Boston and New England at large and the nation rallying around the community, you know, the Boston Strong, everything else. And I was fortunate to be able to go down to the first Red Sox game following that with Big Poppy gave a speech. And
just don't say exactly what he said that day, but that's all right. I think everybody knows.
And just the feeling of togetherness and coming together in the aftermath of that. And certainly there's been a lot of support for the families of the victims, and you know, and certainly we can't forget that and continue to support them.
No, absolutely so. And, you know, the Red Sox had a game the next night in Cleveland. And I remember Will Middlebrooks, the third baseman, was with the Red Sox at the time. And that was the first, on his baseball shoes, he had written Boston Strong. And that's the first I had heard of that. And, of course, it's become very, very famous over the years. And a lot of people have adapted it to their cities or situations, whatever it might be. But the first I saw of it was on the baseball shoes of Will Middlebrooks.
No kidding.
And I don't know whether it was Will Middlebrooks that came up with it. I've never heard him getting any credit for it. But that's the first I saw. They had a, you know, they focused in on his cleats that night, and it had Boston Strong written on them. So whether it was Will Middlebrooks, whoever came up with it, it's been used many, many times since. And, you know, and then the Red Sox went on to win the World Series that year in 2013. And I remember Dave O'Brien's call, you know, the Red Sox win and Boston Strong, you know. So it was
something.
Something that it really was something. And you know, the Red Sox ultimately won the World Series that year, and that was really their rallying cry, Boston Strong. They had finished, by the way, in last place the year before, in 2012.
I forgot about that.
I mean, Bobby Valentine was managing.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But you can't forget Bobby Valentine. You might have forgotten the Red Sox finished in last place, but they went from last to first in 2013, and right now they're on a pretty good roll, too.
Yeah,
having won nine in a row as we air this show on April the 15th, and you know, people hear it various times. You know, Dan, we play these shows from time to time over again on WKXL, so you never know when people are listening, or on nhtalkradio.com. This is also Dare Day, by the way. Dare Day, which is Drug Abuse Resistance Education Day, and I tell you, New Hampshire State Police. Dick Peralt, who
is a trooper. Dick of New Hampshire State Police has done an amazing job with the DARE program in the state of New Hampshire. I really don't know. We should get Dick on sometime to talk about how, you know, the fact that there's so much remote learning going on now, if that has impacted the DARE program, what impact it's had on the DARE program, that the fact that there's so much remote learning now, because, you know, the troopers used to go in, the officers went in from state police and local municipalities as well to help out in the DARE program, and it's been a great program for the state of New Hampshire.
Great program, and thanks to the troopers and state police for everything they do every day, you know, out there for our community, for our state, and just a great group of people.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's also, Dan, National Glazed Spiral Ham Day.
Oh, I love a nice glazed spiral ham. We made one on Easter.
Did you? Yeah.
I made my own glaze.
Did you really?
Yep.
Really? Wow.
You know, we got the spiral ham in the package, and there was a pre-made glaze thing. I don't know, some kind of powder or something. But I said, look, I gotta try my own, and you know, I don't really have the recipe in front of me, but you know, a little bit of brown sugar, some honey, some butter, different kinds of mustard. It was really good.
I'm sure it was. You know, how can you go wrong with a glazed spiral ham?
You really can't.
You can't. It's National High Five Day as well. A lot of high fiving going on these days. In the days of COVID, I guess a lot of high fives rather than handshakes. And it's also here's one for you. It is McDonald's Day. And why is it McDonald's Day? I'll tell you.
Don't know why.
It was on this date
in
1955 that Ray Kroc opened the first McDonald's in Des Plaines, Illinois. That was the first one. And here's how the name came about, for those who don't know. Bedford, New Hampshire natives Richard and Maurice Moe McDonald opened a barbecue restaurant in San Bernardino, California in 1940. 1948, they transformed the restaurant from a sit-down restaurant and introduced what they called at the time the speedy service system. So instead of waiters, you know, waiting on customers and serving, they had the self-service counters, as you know, they've had a McDonald's for years and years and other places too. But they simplified their menu from the barbecue menu and all the other stuff they had to only hamburgers, cheeseburgers, French fries, potato chips, soda, milkshakes, and apple pies. Hamburgers were 15 cents. French fries were 12 cents at the time. And this...
I'm getting hungry, Ken.
I know. And this milk...
Ham and McDonald's, stuff.
I know it. And so enter Ray Kroc, who was a milkshake machine salesman. He sold milkshake machines. And he stopped in one day. He had sold some milkshake makers to the McDonald brothers from Bedford, New Hampshire, who now are in California. And he was at one of their locations in 1954 and convinced the McDonald brothers, to let him open a franchise for them. And, you know, there's some financial financial discussions going on.
Yep.
You know, the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah.
And there's a movie about it, too, The Founder. The Founder. And it's not a bad movie. But the McDonald's name comes from Dick and Mo McDonald from Bedford, New Hampshire.
I did not know that. Ken. Do they have another brother named Ronald?
I'm not sure. We'll have to dig into that. I'm not sure. But and the first McDonald's restaurant in New Hampshire was the one on South Willow Street in Manchester.
Right.
Lots of milkshakes served at McDonald's. Hey, we'll be talking about milk and a whole lot more. Amy Hall is going to join us. It's Feldis and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And guess what, Dan?
What?
Amy's with us.
Oh, great.
Amy Hall, good morning.
She made it. Amy.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Amy Hall, Executive Director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. We're just talking about McDonald's and how McDonald's came to be. Today is McDonald's Day, by the way.
Oh, really? I did not know that. Now I do.
That is true. That is true.
I'm going to go get a Big Mac right after this.
And a milkshake.
And a milkshake.
Provided the milkshake machine isn't broken, right?
Right.
That's true. I went to McDonald's the other day to get a McFlurry.
Those are good.
And the ice cream machine was down.
Well,
what can
I'm
I tell
you? It's a consistent thing. I heard from somebody that sometimes the staff just says it's broken because it's too much of a hassle to clean it, so they just tell people it's broken. I don't know. That could be myth, urban legend, but that is what I've heard.
So is that real milk they use in the milkshakes, Amy?
It sure is.
Oh, well, that's good then. That's good. I wanted to make sure it was the real thing. The real thing that they use.
The real deal.
Because those McDonald's milkshakes are pretty good. I like the McDonald's milkshakes.
No, they absolutely are delicious.
Yeah. Well, Amy, a lot has been made in recent years about the impact of cows on the environment. And we want the real story here on Feldis and Kale. We want to know the impact, the environmental impact of cows.
Sure. I'm so glad you asked me that. We're, you know, Earth Day is 1 week from today. So
right, yeah.
Such an appropriate time to discuss this, and maybe next week we'll touch a little bit more on what we can't get to today. So it's a question that I love to get asked. You know, we know that consumers, myself included, you know, we want to understand how our food choices impact not only our health, but the environment around us as well. So unfortunately, the information and understanding that consumers want, it's been lost in a sea of misinformation, and that especially applies when it comes to dairy's impact on the environment and climate change. And this misunderstanding, a lot of times, leads us into a very real problem in that the everyday consumers, you know, they're confused, they're lost, they're unsure when it comes to making these food choices because they legitimately want to do the right thing. And the truth is that studies find that, you know, when you remove dairy cows entirely from the system or you retire them altogether, there was minimal to no reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, 0.7% reduction to be exact. That's tiny. That is a small amount. And then in most of those study scenarios, and this is where it gets a little frightening, the supply of our naturally essential nutrients that people need to stay healthy was drastically reduced, if not eliminated, as a result of the removal of dairy from our food supply chain. So dairy products, as we all know, and I talk about it all the time, you know, they provide important nutrients in our diets. And those nutrients and vitamins cannot be, regardless of what everybody tells you or anybody tells you, cannot be easily replaced by a 100% plant-based diet alone. I mean, I suppose it could be if you want to sit down and have a meal of 16 cups of spinach, 25 bananas, you know, 92 potatoes. I mean, you get the idea. Can you replace it? Yeah, you can, but it's not in a very palatable way. It's not in a very affordable way. And quite frankly, switching to a plant-based diet is environmentally detrimental because land would have to be, desecrated might be a strong word here, but the amount of land it would take to grow only plants for 100% plant-based diets would be an environmental disaster.
Now, as I understand it, the total emissions from livestock has been on the decline for any number of years.
Oh, absolutely it has. You know, the EPA, you know, the largest source of greenhouse gas emission, which is about 28%, you know, comes from burning fossil fuels for electricity. Yep. It comes from heat. It comes from transportation. Now, the whole of animal agriculture, it accounts for just 10% of GHG emissions. Now, dairy, within that 10%, only accounts for 1.58% of GHG emissions. So when you factor in the extreme detriment of lost dietary nutrients to a 1.58% contribution of GHG, it really doesn't make much sense. It's just, to me, it's mind-blowing when you sit down and you look at the studies and the statistics. And yes, Ken, that number continues to decline. And why is that? It's because our dairy farmers care. I mean, it's not just something that you say. It's not just a talking point. Dairy producers, you know, they live on the land that they farm. One of my favorite quotes, and, you know, it makes me laugh every time because farmers have such an eloquent way of putting things. You know, we don't drink out of our own toilets. It makes absolutely no sense for us to abuse our land, to not make sure that we have healthy, sustainable soils. It makes no sense for us not to recycle, to not recycle wastewater, to not use manure, to not use solar. So as those numbers come down, you have the farmers to thank for that because they put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, better breeding, genetics, nutrition have really increased the efficiency of livestock production in the U.S.
No, it absolutely has. And in terms of efficiency, you know, the environmental impact, here's a great example, of producing 1 gallon of milk in 2017 has shrunk significantly from 2007. This is the latest study we have from 2017. And that these numbers I'm about to tell you have gone down a little bit more. It requires 30% less water, 21% less land, and a 19% smaller carbon footprint. So dairy is not the problem. It is not an environmental problem. It actually, come full circle, is an environmental solution.
And Amy, while we're talking about this, is this something that people continue to raise out there? I haven't heard this concern about the environmental impacts and in terms of climate change, about the dairy industry. I haven't really heard that raised recently. And maybe that's because of some of the additional practices that have been put in place and that kind of thing. What I've heard is what you've talked about in terms of the burning of fossil fuels and vehicles and power production, electricity production, and heating homes. Is it something that is raised to you to our local dairy farmers in recent years and recent months?
Yeah, it most certainly is. It's also, you know, a sprinkled portion of the conversation that's around the dairy industry. We saw a lot of it pre-COVID with discussions about the Green New Deal. And it's a fair discussion to have, because if you don't educate consumers, you know, if you stand up and say, nope, that's not true, dairy isn't a problem, you know, you can't have that defensive attitude. So the questions, yes, Dan, they still come about. It is still a concern. And the dairy industry is doing everything they can to address it when those concerns come up.
Yep.
But what we do need is, you know, an open discussion and an open population of people who are willing to say, okay, just because this person on the news says it doesn't mean it's true. I want to dig a little deeper and I want to ask people who might know the answers.
And that's why we have a program called Feltus and Kale.
Oh, for sure.
Proudly presented by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. Amy, how do you know? You talked about retiring cows in the early part of our discussion. How do you know when it's time for a cow to hang it up, as it were?
They hit retirement age, right?
They do. You know, you start to see them, you know, they want to sit in the lawn chair out by the sun. You know, they start talking about the Golden Girls and, you know, Florida condos.
Their 401k.
Yeah, exactly. They start to talk about their investment portfolios a little bit more than they used to. It's almost, and this is how I like to break it down for people who are not in the dairy industry to understand it. You know, it's almost like an animal. You know, it's almost like a pet. You know, you watch their behavior, you monitor their health, and there becomes a point in time where you have to make the decision. You know, is it beneficial to keep them going, or, you know, are they suffering? Is it time to let them go? So how do dairy farmers know when it's time? The very same way that everyday people know that it's time.
I guess so. But what's the average age of a cow? What's the lifespan of a cow?
Well, right now on a dairy farm, it's about 12 years. 12 years is the average span. It could be a little more, it could be a little less, but that's right about where we're averaging.
Very good. Amy Hall is our guest, and Amy, the executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, our lead sponsor here on Feldis and Kale at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We'll take a quick break and be back with Amy right after these important messages. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Amy Hall, executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, is with us. And what else is going on as far as the dairy promotion is concerned, Amy?
Well, I mean, you know, I hate to keep beating this drum, but I have to until Memorial Day weekend. We actually just this morning at 6:45 a.m., I sent the final changes and final edits to our designer for the ice cream trail.
All right,
so nice.
That is going to be headed to the printer very soon. Now, of course, printing takes a while, distribution takes a while, so we are on track for Memorial Day weekend. That's the biggest thing that I have going on right now.
Ice cream trail, Memorial Day weekend. Amy, can you give us a little bit of the scoop on it?
Sure, absolutely.
Democratic humor again.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love a good, you know what we call that in my house? A dad joke.
Yeah, that's right. My jokes were terrible before I became a dad, and then all of a sudden they're acceptable as dad jokes once I became a dad.
Exactly. So we are actually the first in the nation, which I'm very proud of, and our dairy farmers are very proud of, to develop an ice cream trail. And what this is, it's a map that highlights our local ice cream shops from Pittsburgh to Nashua to the seacoast to Keene. So all over the state, you'll get to see areas that you've probably never been in. You'll get to visit small businesses that you've never frequented, especially our ice cream shops. So it is a passport program, and this year we have 42 different ice cream shops. You have from Memorial Day weekend, which is when it's released, through Columbus Day weekend, which is typically when a lot of our shops close, to complete all 42 stops. So you go to a shop and they'll give you a special passport sticker. And then at the end of your adventure, you send it in to Granite State Dairy Promotion, me right here. And then what we do is once we have all those names, we come on to a show that you might be familiar with, Feltus and Kale, who will draw a grand prize winner who will receive a $200 Amazon gift card and a $200 basket full of New Hampshire-made goodies.
Wow.
That's great.
So not only do you have a summer full of great ice cream, but you might win some great prizes as well. So there you go. And the passports are available where, Amy?
They will be at every rest area in the state of New Hampshire, every participating ice cream shop. The brochure itself, you could print it off of our website, but that's no fun. Pick up an actual brochure. And if you can't make it to a rest area and you want to know, okay, where can I start, head over to our website. The 2020 trail is still up. I have to take that down in preparation for 2021. Pick a shop, start there, and grab a map while you're at that shop.
It's great advice. It's a great ice cream trail, and Memorial Day weekend is the start. So there you go. And the grand finale will be on Feldis and Kale when we draw that grand prize winner. So we look forward to that. But I know we'll have updates, and you'll be telling us, where the shops are and that sort of thing in future Feldis and Kale programs here on WKXL. But Amy, as always, very informative, lots of fun, and we will talk with you in a week.
Hey, thank you guys very much. I hope you have an excellent rest of your day.
You too, Amy.
You as well, Amy. Thank you so much. Amy Hall, Executive Director, Granite State Dairy Promotion, our primary sponsor here, our presenting sponsor on Feldis and Kale at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. And Dan, you know, we're coming down the home stretch. Good show today with the great Dave Parker, and a guy who I think should be in the Hall of Fame.
You should be.
But you know, they don't really look at defense that much. You know, he had great offensive stats. Maybe he didn't hit 500 home runs and, you know, have all the offensive boxes checked. But what a great all-around player he was in his day.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about it a little bit. I mean, talk about five-tool athletes. He was a five-tool athlete before they were a five-tool athlete. You know, to talk about that. So, you know, he had 339 home runs and, you know, lifetime average of 291. But his defense was amazing.
It was.
I asked him the question, you know, what felt better, throwing somebody out at home or throwing them out at second or hitting a home run. He actually said hitting a home run.
He did. Yeah. He did. Yeah. Dan Feldes, Ken Kale, Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire Dairy Farmers.